All right, Shabbos, good morning, good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning. Sure to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Tammuz, Haba Alinu, Litova, Yonah, and Abiram, for dedicating all the Shimon and Joshua's this month in the Schus of Refuah Shlema for Eliezer ben Elisheva, Daniel and Batsheva, Pavel Varitzor, for dedicating all the Shimon and Joshua's this month for the third yard site of Reb Shlomo Vey, Shlomo ben Yehuda Aryeh, and Yossi and Malka Cohen, for dedicating all the Shimon and Joshua's this month in memory of Rabbi Dr. Nachum Shor, Reb Nachum ben Reb Chaim Yoshua Halevi, Zichron Levracha. We thank our week of learning sponsors, Aaron and Alana Weinberg, in honor of the 15th anniversary of the miraculous complete recovery of their son, Yonatan Shai. Our day of learning sponsors, Mr. and Mrs. Ringo, in memory of Mrs. Ringo's father, Yitzchak Isaac ben Yeshaya Moshe, whose yard site is today. Our Dafyomi sponsors, Ayala and Sarah Steinberg, in the schuss of a continued health for Shulam Eschana Bas Sushan for an ultimate refuah shlema. Shmuley and Hindi Abramson as a schuss for a refuah shlema for Shmuley's father, Chaim Mordechai ben Chava, and David and Elizabeth Green, in memory of David's grandmother, Frieda Green, Zichron of the Brach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamos Avin Aliyah, the families in Nechama, all those who need a refuah, have one together with Kol Chole Yisrael. In the merit of Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should continue to look after our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael. Shall our holy soldiers to be successful. B'chol Maaseh Yedehem. We should be zochim merit Hashem to Yeshua's and Nechama's brachas for all of Klal Yisrael. And so with that, let us begin. We have an incredible daf ahead of us today, a really fascinating daf. Today's daf is Samech Beis 62. We are picking up on the bottom of Samech Aleph on the Beis 61b. Two lines up from the bottom. Actually, I really stopped like one line short from the actual end of the conversation yesterday. But just to reorient ourselves a little bit, we are speaking about the fascinating topic regarding kosher and non-kosher birds. The fascinating ambiguity, or I should say challenge, of this conversation is, as we mentioned yesterday, that whereas when it comes to behemoths, when it comes to animals, chayas, fish, the Torah gives explicit simonim, what makes an animal kosher, what makes an animal non-kosher. When it comes to birds, pretty much all we have is a list of 24 non-kosher birds. That's what we have. Now the shaila just is, what do we do with that list? So the Gemara highlighted the idea that essentially what we do is we find four unique qualities, characteristics by kosher birds. Number one, they have quote-unquote that extra toe. Number two, they have a crop. Number three, the gizzard peels very easily. And number four, Einodaris, they don't grab and eat. Okay, so we'll say, so on the other hand, we see also non-kosher birds don't have those simanim. The challenge, of course, that we ran into is, in that list of 24 birds, there's only one of them that has none of those qualities. That's the Nesher. Then we have the Orev that has the raven, two of those qualities, and then the Peres and Oznia, which have one of those qualities. So this creates an entire sense of ambiguity. Exactly what is our rule set? To compound the problem, is that there are many birds listed in that list that we don't know the definition of what they are. Right? It's not clear from their biblically given names exactly what type of species of bird this is. Okay, so that's kind of the challenge, the bird challenge. It doesn't sound very appealing, but it's the bird challenge of information that we are in the middle of right now. The Gemara just happens to end off with another piece of information. The Gemara says, Ela Torin, the cause of Rahman al-Amali. So why does the Torah go out of its way to say Torin? Now if you look at Rashi is about 12 lines up from the bottom in Rashi. Ela Torin, the cause of Rahman al-Amali. So again, what's interesting is, remember, both sides, when the Torah speaks about Torin, so remember, we usually have Torin and Bnei Yono. So Torin, as we usually go ahead and translate as turtle doves, Bnei Yono, young pigeons, although even those definitions are a little bit fluid. So here's what's interesting. It's not like when the Torah says Torin, that's giving us the list of kosher birds. Because the list of kosher birds is really gleaned from what? Whatever's not on the list of non-kosher birds. In other words, if you're a non-kosher bird, you're listed. If you're not one of those 24 guys, you're good to go. So why does the Torah go out of its way to list the Torah? To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ukva Bar Chama L'Karban. It's actually the listing of Torah in the Torah is for a totally different reason. It's actually not to tell us that the Torah bird is kosher, because that I could get from the fact that it's not listed amongst the 24 non-kosher birds. Torah is listed in the Torah ultimately again to teach us that it is the bird that is used for karbanic service. Look at Rashi, the karban, shehin levadon ksherin lekarban, velo of acher. It is only the Torah that is fit for use as a karban and not any other bird. Now, of course, that statement is not totally true, because remember again, there's the ben yona. But the idea that the Gemara is highlighting is that Torah is usable for a karban because the Torah goes out of its way to highlight it. Okay, let's go back there. Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says as follows. So we'll say now, very interesting halacha. Top of Samech Beis. Hayabaki bahen obishmo sehem. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. So remember, we're focusing now for a moment on the peres and Oznia. Now, again, we don't know the definition of those birds, but here's what I do know is they possess one of the four qualities of kosher birds. Now, exactly which one also, the Gemara doesn't indicate, because obviously, again, if I'm not sure what the bird is, I'm also not sure what the quality is. But I know that it possesses one of the characteristics of kosher birds. Okay, so now watch this. So Nachman says, if you are a bucky, let's say you're a guy and you know exactly which birds the peres and Oznia are. You know exactly what they are. And what happened? Ofa babasim and echad. And then there's another bird that comes before you, and it has one kosher characteristic. What's the halacha? Tahar. Now, you know, Rabbi said, this is very interesting. See, the Gemara is operating with the understanding that there are only two birds that are non-kosher that have one kosher characteristic. It's an anomaly. And that's why the Torah lists them. The peres and Oznia. Therefore, Nachman says, if you know for sure what the peres and Oznia birds are, you know for sure which birds they are, and then someone brings a bird before you, and that bird has one kosher characteristic, but it's not the peres and Oznia, then what? You could eat it. You could eat it. Fascinating. To which the Gemara says, lo hayabaki b'adam mishmo sein, but if you're not an expert in terms of which bird is the peres, which bird is the Oznia, and what happens, and one brings before you a bird with one kosher simen, then ultimately the mishmo sein b'simen echad tame. And if one brings before you a bird with one kosher simen, you can't eat the bird. Why can't you eat the bird? Why? Because it may be the peres or Oznia. Similarly, b'shnei simanim tahar v'hu shiyakir orev. So listen to this. Same idea. Let's say someone brings before you a bird, right? And that bird has two kosher simanim. And you know for sure which bird is the orev. Now we get a bunch of, what was unique about the orev? The orev is the one bird on the list that has two kosher simanim. So someone brings a bird before you and it has two kosher simanim. You know for sure that this bird is not an orev. You can eat the bird. You can eat the bird because, again, orev is the only non-kosher bird with two simanim. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, you can go, you know for sure that this is a bird, that this is a kosher bird. To which the Gemara says, orev visulo. That's it. In other words, is orev the only kosher bird? Is orev the only bird? Ultimately, again, is orev the only non-kosher bird with two simanim? V'hatanya, we learned, orev ze orev. So, right, when the Pasuk says orev, that means orev. Okay, I think we could all follow that drasha. Right? Let me know. But here's also what the Pasuk says. It says an orev, let me know, which means according to its kind or according to its species. What does that mean? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, lahavi es hazarzir. So Rabbi Eliezer says, there's another bird included in the orev family, which is the zarzir. Again, I've also remember, what's complicated in this sugya is the lack of clear definitions for these birds. But there's this other bird called the zarzir. And the zarzir, like the orev, also has two kosher simanim. So we see again that it's not just the orev, it's the zarzir. Amr lo Rabbi Eliezer, valo anshe kfar tamarta, shebi Yehuda haya ochlenosa. Listen to this. But yet, so they said to Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying the zarzir is not a kosher bird. Here's the problem. The people who lived in the village of Tamarta, which was in the tribal area of Yehuda, used to eat this zarzir. They ate the zarzir. Why? Mipnei shiyesh lohen zefek. Because the zarzir had a crop that was indicative. They felt that it was a kosher bird, and therefore they ate it. But you, Rabbi Lazar, are saying you can't eat a zarzir because a zarzir is part of the orev family. Amr lahan, Rabbi Eliezer responded, Afhin asidin litian esadin. Oh, they're gonna have to stand judgment for that. Rav Elazar says, Shkayach, I know they do it. They will say, this is a very important piece of information. Just because someone does something doesn't make it right. And just because a lot of people do something doesn't make it right. So they say to Rav Elazar, the people of Tamarta are eating this Zarzir bird. Rav Elazar says, yeah, I know, and that's really terrible. And after 120, they're going to have to give accounting for why they are consistently consuming this non-kosher bird. Davar acher, the other possibility is liminehu lahavi sinunis levana de Rebbe Elazar. Others say that what is liminehu? Again, Rebbe says, remember, so just to follow the train of thought over here, right? Rav Nachman is coming along. Rav Nachman is doing something very interesting. That there are certain unique kosher, non-kosher birds that are only non-kosher because the Torah says they're not kosher. So for example, the Paris and Osnia have one kosher simit. So Rav Nachman says, if you know for sure which is the Paris and Osnia birds, and someone brings before you another bird that is not Paris and Osnia, that has one kosher simit, that is a kosher bird. If you don't know which one is Paris and Osnia, you can't eat the bird because that bird that they're showing you may be the Paris and Osnia. Similarly, someone goes ahead and brings you a bird with two kosher simonim. Right now, the only bird in that list of non-kosher birds that has two kosher simonim is the orev. And you know for sure which bird is an orev, and that bird that they brought before you is not it. That's kosher and you could eat it. To which the Gemara says, hold up. There are other things in the orev family, because the pasuk, the Torah says, ve'esa orev limino. Limino means for a species, there are other things included. So now the Gemara is just going through the other potential things included in the orev family. Davar acher, another possibility, liminehu, or limino. What does it mean when it says the orev limino? Lahavi sinunis levana. This comes to include the white sinunis. That the white sinunis bird is also in the same category as the orev, and therefore is also divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Amrulo, they said to him, Valo, anshe galil elyon ochlem oso. One second. The people of Galil eat the white sinunis. Why? Because its gizzard is easily peeled. And if its gizzard is peeled, so bepashtos, what does that mean? What does that mean? That it's a kosher bird. To which Rav Elazar responds, okay, they're doing the wrong thing. Amar lahem, af hein asidin litin esadin. They'll also stand judgment for that. I will say, by the way, I'll just point out something very interesting. If you notice his lashon over here of af hein asidin litin esadin, we find this expression in the Gemara. When someone's doing something wrong, so again, the person's saying, okay, they'll have to stand judgment for that. Why doesn't Rabbi Elazar just say they're doing something wrong? So from here you see something very profound, which is just the sensitivity with which you have to speak about another Jew, even if that other Jew is doing something wrong, right? Rabbi Elazar could have said, they're eating treif. It's not what he says. He says, okay, after 120, they'll stand judgment. We all stand judgment for the lives that we lead in this world. So after 120, they'll stand judgment as well. Very profound. Rabbi Elazar is saying, I'm not the judge. I think what they're doing is wrong, but I don't need to say it. After 120, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide who's doing right and who's doing wrong. But at the end of the day, I'm not standing in judgment of another Jew. Rabbi Osai, what a profound lesson, especially like Erev 3 weeks, Erev Shivasa V'Tamos, where so much, we mourn so much over the course of the 3 weeks. And what we mourn is so clearly, fundamentally rooted, at least initially, in what we do to each other. And one of the easy, nothing's easy, but one of the simple ways in which we could start in that journey, in just repealing the rifts and repealing all of the divisiveness in Klal Yisrael, is not to stand in judgment of each other. You don't know the full picture, you don't know the totality of it. Rabbi Elazar, according to Rabbi Elazar Shita, these people are eating treif, but yet he doesn't say it. Af hein asid litin esadin. They'll give judgment. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges ultimately again what's right and what's wrong. I wouldn't eat it. I don't think it's kosher. But I'm also not going to verbally condemn another Jew. Instead, again, I'm not going to judge. I'll leave judgment ultimately for the Ribono Shel Olam. Incredible. Ela orev v'chol min orev. So again, I will say, when the pasuk says orev, it means the raven and any other thing that's in the raven family. Now again, I will say, the challenge, of course, over here is that we don't know what that includes. So this, if you begin to see what's happening over here, when it comes to birds, the problem or the challenge just seems to be getting compounded over and over and over. So now, for example, we have the list of 24, but now it's more than 24, right? Because the Torah itself already tells us that at least in the case of the Orev, there are other birds that fit into the Orev family category. And we don't know what they are, yet ultimately, again, there is liability. Amar Amemar, sorry, Amemar said, Hilchasa, Therefore, the pasuk says, "Of haba b'simin echad tarhu." So we'll say. So now, watch this. Amemar said, "Halacha l'maisa." Any bird which presents with one of the four kosher characteristics is kosher. Now you're about to say, obviously, the caveat to that is that it's not on the list. Right? It's not on the list of 24 non-kosher birds. Because obviously, again, on that list of 24 non-kosher birds, there are birds which present with kosher simanim, right? The orev, the peres, the aznia, and in fact, every single other one of them, except for what? Except for the nesher, right? You're going to say, it's very important. On the list of 24 birds that are not kosher, the only bird on that list that has no kosher characteristics is the nesher, which we loosely translate as the eagle. Every other bird on that list has at least one kosher characteristic. So when a Mamar comes along, a Mamar says, any bird which presents with one kosher characteristic is going to be kosher, as long as what? As long as what? It's not on that list. Furthermore, v'hu delo doris. And again, I will say, here's what's very interesting. Amira comes along and he says, really, the defining quality for non-kosher birds is that they grab. And again, I will say, generally, when birds grab, generally what that is associated with is they're predatory birds in some way. That seems to be the defining characteristic of a non-kosher bird. A non-kosher bird will be a bird that doesn't peck and eat, but rather, again, grabs and eats. So therefore, Amemar says, as long as a bird presents with at least one kosher characteristic, and it does not grab its food, and you know for sure that it's not one of the 24 on the list of non-kosher birds, you're good to go. You're good to go. So Amemar says, Amalei Rav Ashi le'Amemar, Had Rav Nachman Mai. What about Rav Nachman said, right? Again, I'm about to say, Rav Nachman seemed to indicate that ultimately, again, Rav Nachman said, all of this is only true if halacha l'maisa, you know what the peres and aznia is, right? Because Rav Nachman said, if you don't know which bird is the peres and aznia, then even if a bird presents with one kosher characteristic, you still have to be concerned that it's the peres and aznia. To which the Gemara says, Amrlei lo shmiyali. Amemar said, oh, I never heard Rav Nachman's ruling. To which the Gemara says, no, he heard it. Kalomar lo svirali. I don't hold of Rav Nachman's ruling. Why not? My ika mishum peres and aznia. Because what is Rav Nachman concerned about? Rav Nachman is concerned about the peres and aznia. That's what he's concerned, because these are birds with one kosher characteristic. Peres v'aznia less nuhu b'yishuv. But the peres and aznia, b'osai, they don't exist in inhabited areas. So therefore, again, it's very interesting. Amemar said, if you see a bird that has one kosher characteristic and it does not grab its food, that is a kosher bird. What about peres and aznia? Peres and aznia are not found in our inhabited areas, and therefore there is nothing to be worried about. Fascinating. So we'll say, this is a pretty dramatic statement, right? Because Amemar is coming along and saying, he's saying, halacha l'maisa, as long as the bird presents with at least one kosher simen, and it's not doris, and it doesn't grab and eat, you can eat the bird. You can eat the bird, which is really quite fascinating. I'm Rav Yehuda. So we'll say, so again, we're going to spend a few moments, hopefully, towards the end of the shir, on the Shulchan Aruch, even though, again, we're not finished with the sugya, but I do want to give you a little bit of clarity with this. I'm Rav Yehuda. Of ha-mesarit kash le-taras ha-metzora. Let's listen to this. So we know that as part of the purification process for the metzora, ultimately, again, there are birds that are brought. So the Gemara says something very interesting. Literally, again, a bird that scratches can be used for the mitzora purification process. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says, "Over the taras mitzora shoot sipor ha'amr b'torah." Okay, v'zohi. So we'll say what we're going to see essentially is that for the mitzora, you really use a bird ultimately again that is like a free spirited or a live on its own type of bird. So the idea is that a bird that scratches will be a bird that gets away from anything that tries to confine it. So therefore, a bird that scratches, you could use for the mitzorah purification process. Okay? So the Gemara says, V'zohi senunis levana shenechleku ba Rabbi Elazar Chama. And by the way, the bird that they're referring to over here, what's this scratching bird? That's also known as the white senunis. Now, if you remember again, the white senunis, it was subject to machlokas, ultimately again, between Rabbi Elazar and the Chacham, and whether or not it's a kosher bird. Amar Meimar says, Bichiura karsa koli amalo pligi disharia. So let's listen to this. If we're talking about a bird, this sinunis bird, if we're talking about a sinunis bird that has a white stomach, right? A white stomach, everyone agrees that it's kosher. Okay, because remember again, for the process of the Metzora, you must use kosher birds. So therefore, again, everyone agrees that if you have a sinunis bird with a white stomach, that it is usable. It's kosher. Keep these. Where's the machlokes? Yes, biyaruka karsa. People say, remember again, we mentioned in a couple of, I don't know, I guess maybe last week, we were speaking about the insides of the animal, and the Mishnah said that if the insides are yarok, so remember I mentioned the idea that yarok is one of these words that when used in the Gemara could mean either yellow or green. And previously, the context was green. Here, interestingly enough, Rashi points out that it's yellow. It's yellow. So keep ligi. Where's the machlokes? Biroka karsa. If you have a sinunis bird with a yellow stomach, Rabbi Lazar says that it's asr. For Rabbanon sharu, and ultimately again, the Rabbanon say that it's mutter. For hilchasak Rabbi Lazar, and the halacha ultimately again is like Rabbi Lazar that you can't use the sinunis bird with the yellow stomach. Marzutra masni hachi. Marzutra a different version of this. Bidiroka kresa. If the bird has a yellow, if the sinunis bird has a yellow stomach, everyone agrees that it's going to be aser. So keep ligi. Where's the machlokes? Bidechiyura karsa. Ultimately, again, when it has a white stomach, Rabbi Lazar says ultimately, with a white stomach, you can't use the sinunis bird because he holds it's a non-kosher species. And the Rabbanon say ultimately again that it's mutar. Behilchasa kirabanan the shara. And the halacha is like the Rabbanon. Ultimately, again, who say that it's mutter. So says Gemara Bishta, well, the man the Amar Bichiura Karso Pligi, according to the opinion that says that with a white stomach, they argue, Hainu Diktani Zohi Sinunis Levana. So it makes sense because then the Gemara said before, this is the white Sinunis. This is the white Sinunis. El Laman the Amar Bidiroka Pligi, but according to the opinion that says that they're arguing ultimately, again, when it has a yellow stomach, my Zohi Sinunis Levana. So then why does it call it Sinunis Levana? In other words, if it has a green stomach or a yellow stomach, why are they calling it Sinunis Levana? La fuke debati de'uchmasi. This comes to exclude, ultimately, again, a blackbird. Okay. Amar Rachba, Amar Rabbi Huda. Tesil, pasul mishum torin, v'kasha mishum b'nei yona. Okay, so this is very interesting. So there's another bird called the tesil bird. That's the name of the bird. So if you remember again, we saw this also earlier in the Masechta. So there are two different birds that you could use for karbanos. Tor or B'nai Yonah. Now, okay, so leaving aside, so normally we go ahead and we translate B'nai Yonah as young pigeons and Tor as a turtle dove. So what's important to understand is they have different characteristics in order to be usable for karbanic purposes. B'nai Yonah have to be young. If they get too old, if they quote unquote mature, they're no longer usable. The way to remember that is they're called B'nai Yonah, right? Young turtle doves or young pigeons. On the other hand, Tor, in order to be used, has to be mature. If it's too young, ultimately, again, it can't be used as the karban. Okay, so now watch this. So therefore, the Gemara says that to seal, it's interesting enough, Rachba says, essentially, this tesil bird, it is in the category of pigeons. It's in the pigeon family. Because it's in the pigeon family, it's only usable for a karban if it's young. If it gets old, it's no longer usable. The Gemara goes weiter. Dat sifi, vitorin, shal rachba, kshirin, mishum torin, psul mishum neyona. Similarly again, atsifi, this is another type of bird. Torin shorachba, this was another type of torin. These are in the torin family. So they are in the turtle dove family. Therefore, again, I'll say, what does that mean? Ksher mishum b'nei tor, which means they're kosher if they're mature. Upsulin mishum b'nei yona. But they are possible, ultimately, again, if they are too young. Okay? Massive Rav Daniel Bar Katina, Rav Katina. So Rav Daniel Bar Rav Katina raised the question. Kala ofos amudeis. Kala ofos psulin b'meichatos. So this is very interesting. All birds invalidate para aduma water. Now, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi in just a moment. Tap Rashi 62b. Quite interesting. So psulin b'meichatos. Rashi says imshasu mehen. Listen to this. If you have a bird, now both say, remember again, water of para aduma. Take the ashes of para aduma, mix it with spring water, a couple of other eitz erez ve'ezov. Right? You have some cedar wood. You have some hyssop. You mix it all together. Imagine for a moment here, you have this receptacle, you have this kli of paraduma water, and a bird comes along and sips from the water. So the Gemara now says that will invalidate the water. Now, why is that? If you take a look at Rashi, psulin bevechatos, umshasol nehen mipnei she'ein motzitzin ella magbien pihen. Listen to this. So if the birds go ahead and drink from this water, so ultimately, again, they will invalidate it. Why? Because it will say, when the birds drink from water, they don't suck. Rather, what do? They take in water, they lift up their head, and like kind of like, I don't know what the technical term is, gurgle it back, right? So they scoop up, lift their head back, and then the water goes down. So listen to this. Now, as a result of that, there's some dribble, right? So in other words, they scoop up the water, move their head back, and then there's some dribble. There's some water that falls out from the side of their beak, the side of their mouth. Now, as a result of that, Vahari hein kimi shenasis bemalacha. Now, again, both say paraduma water becomes invalidated if you work with it. If you use it for any type of work, you use it for anything else other than the actual paraduma service. So the issue over here is that since this water was inside of the animal, right? So again, it went into the mouth of the animal kind of gurgled it back, some of it dribbled out, that will invalidate the paraduma water. Incredible. Incredible. So go back to the Gemara. So therefore again, the Gemara says, so this was Rav Daniel Bar Katin, Bar Rav Katina said, all birds, when they go ahead and they drink from the mechatos, from the paraduma waters, they invalidate it. Chutz, with the exception of, chutz min ha-yona, except for the Yonah. That's interesting, by the way. Yonah is normally translated as dove. In this context, interestingly enough, often the translation that's used is pigeon, right? Which is also fascinating. Okay, except for the Yonah. Why? Mipnei shemo tzatzas. This is fascinating because the Yonah sucks. Now, what does that mean? When the Yonah goes ahead and drinks, I could do that again if that's helpful. Right? So again, it sucks in the water. The idea over here is that when it drinks, it just pulls it in, and therefore, there's no dribble that comes out. No dribble, right? So in other words, two different types of bird drinkage, right? So again, either there is the, we'll call it, I'm trying to think of a good... Yeah, I guess it's like the slurp and swallow, where like, you know, again, the bird goes in, right, takes in some of the water, lifts its head back, right, or there's just the suck, right? So again, if it's the slurp and swallow, there's the issue of the dribble that comes out. That will invalidate the para aduma water, because again, some of the dribble goes back into the para aduma water, as opposed to just the straight suck and drink, which ultimately, again, there's no dribble as a result of that, the Gemara says. So watch this. Vim Isa. Now again, I'm about to say, if this is true, Vim Isa, listni chutz mi yona v'tesil. Now again, if at the end of the day, as we said before, that the tesil bird is truly in the pigeon family, then ultimately, the tesil should be included in this as well. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Zeira, so listen to this. So Rabbi Zeira says, ze motzeitz umeki, suppose here's the difference. Rabbi Zeira says as follows. Rabbi Zeira says, this one is very interesting. This one, motzitz umeki, means literally it sucks, but ultimately meki means it spits some back. This one ultimately sucks and does not spit one back. So, lemaisa, what the Gemara is pointing out over here is, everything depends. There's nothing to text back and forth over here with this whole thing. Whatever's going on with the text exchange. I see what's happening here. Right? So the Gemara says as follows. So there are different birds that drink in different ways. So bottom line, what it comes down to is like this. If the bird drinks in a way where there's dribble that comes out, it's going to invalidate the paraduma waters. If halacha lemaisa, again, it just drinks straight and there's no dribble, then halacha lemaisa is going to be fine. Okay, incredible. Amar Rav Yehuda. You know, both say, point over here is, you begin to see the ambiguity. It would be wonderful to say that we're getting greater clarity on this sugya as we go through it. We're not, obviously, because the problem we just keep getting into is not knowing definitions. Right? I want to say, this is what's so profound about this. Halacha is all about definitions. Gemara is all about definitions, all about creating categories, right? All about creating rules. The problem just is over here, we have actually an excellent rule that there are 24 birds that are not kosher. The problem just is we don't know the definitions of their names. So because of that, when we come up with other birds, and this was like that, but if you don't know the core definitions of the birds, so again, here it happens, see, there's an important halacha, nothing to do with kashrus, but having to do with the waters of Parah Aduma, which is if the bird drinks and some of it gets back in, right, it dribbles out, halacha l'maaseh, that's going to validate the Parah Aduma. But okay, let's go back to it. Amar Rav Yehuda, we'll say Amar Sama Pleizma, is 62b, four lines after that. Amar Rav Yehuda, honey, kofshani, tzutzaini, k'sher l'gabi mizbeach. Okay, so let's listen to this. Yehuda says, these birds, this is the name of the bird, kofshani, tzutzaini. It's a mouthful. Right? So these kofshani, tzutzaini birds, they are kosher to be used for sacrificial purposes. Right? Vehein, hein, torun shal rachba. By the way, that's the same thing as the rachba torun that we just mentioned before. Okay, same category. So Gemara says, Meisir, is a kasha, Ezov. Listen to this, so this is very interesting. Now, so what the Gemara just did, by the way, is that in the category of Torin, right? So remember, what's important about Torin? The Torah tells me that I could go ahead and use Torin for sacrificial purposes. Okay, I can use it for sacrificial purposes. Now the Gemara says that halacha l'maisa, there's something else included in the Torin family. What else is included? This other bird called Torin Shal Rachba. That's the name of the bird. The Rachba Torin. Those are also included. Whereas, oh, that's a problem. Why watch this? Mason, where is the kasha? Ezov. Now, again, I will say, remember again, when do you use Ezov? Ezov is the hyssop plant. So remember again, for Parah Aduma, when you're making the mixture of the Parah Aduma waters, so remember again, you have Parah Aduma ashes, you have water, and you also have Ezov, you also have hyssop, right? Hyssop is actually used, well, part of the reason hyssop is used is because the hyssop is dunked, is dipped into the water, and the hyssop is actually what you use to go ahead and sprinkle the water on the person who is tame. So the Gemara says, Ezov, you could use Ezov, hyssop, below Ezov, yon. But you can't use yon Ezov. Velo Ezov kuchli, and you can't use blue Ezov. Velo Ezov romi, you can't use Roman Ezov. Velo midbari, you can't use desert Ezov. Velo kol Ezov sheyesh lo shem levai. They both say you cannot use any other Ezov that has a descriptive name. Now, what does this mean? What kind of Ezov can you use? Something that's just called Ezov. But once it's called something other than plain Ezov, you can't use it. That's what's called, we'll say, a Shem Levi means another descriptive name. If it has another descriptive name, you can't use it. So we'll say, so again, why is Gemara bringing this up? Because we would assume that this rule applies for anything sacrificial. And therefore what? And therefore, halacha lemaisa, what we call the Torin Rachba, the Rachba Torin, should also not be usable for karbonic purposes. Why? Because they're not called Torin. What are they called? They're called Rachba Torin. But we just said before that anything that has any type of additional, like descriptive name attached to it, shouldn't really be usable. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi, listen to this. Kol shenishtana shmo kol dematan Torah, v'kpida Torah alav, yesh lo shem levai pasal. So let's listen to this. Anything that had an additional descriptive name before Matan Torah. It was known by its core name and descriptive name. And the Torah goes out of its way to use its core name and not its descriptive name. That means the Torah's makbid on it. So for example, when it comes to hyssop, right? Even before Matan Torah, there are all these different types of hyssop. Yet the Torah says the only thing you could use is Ezov, which tells you the only thing you can use is something called Ezov. Bless you. But if it has any type of other modifier, any other type of descriptive name attached to it, it is possible. However, Bahani, when it comes to these birds, lo nishtanishman called them Matan Torah. So I'll say, interestingly enough, these names, the Rachba Torin, were not around before Matan Torah. So because of that, again, therefore, their descriptive names will not invalidate them for use. Okay, fascinating. Rava Amar Rava says, Hani kufshani tzutzaini basrayhu stomacharini. So Rava gives a different answer. Rava says, by the way, these kufshani tzutzaini, because we'll say these were another type of birds that were also known as a type of Torin. Rashi says, Torin, Belashon Armoi, Tzutzaini Shem Makom. So Kufshani means Torin. So, and Tzutzaini is the name of a place. So these Tzutzain Torin are usable for Kabbalic purposes. Aye, but they have a descriptive name to which the Gemara says, Ba'asraya Stamikarlu. In their place in Tzutzaina, they're only known as Torin. So because in their core place they have no additional descriptive name, therefore Halach Lamaisa, they can be used. Incredible. All right, let's go back there. I'm Rav Yehuda. Hani karzi debei chilfi. Sharu. So we'll say these birds, this is actually very interesting. Rashi says over here, karzi is chagovin. grasshoppers. Again, I will say we're transitioning. Now, again, we're not finished with birds. Again, I will say, we at this point in time, it is absolutely unequivocally clear what is a kosher bird, right? Just it's fascinating to see after going through the sugya, it's really not clear. Again, if I knew all 24 things on the list, it's very clear. But given that there's a tremendous amount of ambiguity around anything on that list, it is not clear at all what is a kosher bird. So again, we're not finished yet with this. The Gemara is just going on a bit of a detour. Listen to this. Sahani karzi de bechilfi. So karzi, Rashi points out over here, are chagavim, grasshoppers. The grasshoppers, ultimately, again, de bechilfi, that live in the reeds. So reed grasshoppers, sharu, are permitted for consumption. Udebe karvi asiri. But ultimately, again, the grasshoppers of be karvi. Okay, this was another type of grasshopper. Right? Rashi says over here, bekarbi, bekarva means kruv, cabbage. So the grasshoppers that live in the cabbage fields, so cabbage patch grasshoppers, ultimately, not very popular with the kids, right? Cabbage patch grasshoppers, ultimately, again, those are going to be usser. But interestingly enough, reed patch grasshoppers, those are going to be mutter. How do you remember that? Amar Avina. So the Gemara says, by the way, if you eat cabbage patch grasshoppers, you get malchus because you eat something treif. Mishum sheretz alef because of flying shlatzen. Okay, incredible. So we'll say, so that's just halacha. So cabbage patch grasshoppers is also, if you eat it again, you get malchus for eating like flying insects. And ultimately, reed patch grasshoppers are going to be mutter. Brahmin Vihuda. Vihuda said, sarda shari barda osir. So okay, we'll say, what is this? Sarda, Rashi says, is barda. Now we're back to birds. Back to birds. So if Yehuda says the tsarda bird is mutter, the barda bird is aser. The simonic, the way to remember that is bar mine. Bar mine means except for you. So it's a little bit of a play on words. Barda, bar mine, except for you, you're not kosher. Marda sveka. The marda bird, suffik whether or not it's kosher or not. Ravasi says, shmona svekasin. In general, in the world of birds, there are eight different svekas, eight different types of birds that we're not sure exactly what their status is. So what are the eight? Chova, choga, suga, harnuga, tushlami, marda, kuchilna, barnafcha. Okay, those are our eight suffik birds. My svekayu. So we'll say, what is it? Like, what is it about these birds, ultimately, again, that make them a suffik? And again, I will say, remember, again, we're going to see, it seems to be, based on what Amemar said on Amud Aleph, it must be clear that all of these birds do possess one quality, which is, they're not doris, right? They don't grab and eat. Because it's clear from the Gemara that is the one quality that out of the gate will disqualify you as a kosher bird. If you're grabbing and eating, that is no longer a kosher bird. So okay, so what's the suffix about these? This is very interesting. My sekayu, ofos tahorim, kurkibanan niklaf. Utimein, in kurkibanan niklaf. So in general, we have a rule. What's the rule? We saw kosher birds, their gizzard is easily peeled. Easily peeled. Non-kosher birds, the gizzard is not peelable. So what's the issue with these birds? Vahani, kurkibanan niklaf besakino. Ultimately, again, these eight birds, their gizzard could be peeled, but what? Not by hand, only by use of a knife. So that was the suffix. Does that mean that it's a peelable gizzard, right? Or not? Maybe peelable gizzard means only if halacha l'maaseh can be done by hand, not by knife. Aye, one second. Vaha, hahu bar avza, dahavi bimar shmuel, dalo havi maklev korkabane. But one second. There was a story once about a goose. Right in the house, again, I will say, and a goose, everyone is agreeing, of course, as a kosher animal, in the house of Bar Shmuel, that they were unable to go ahead and peel the gizzard. So what did they do? Va'osvei b'shimsha, they put the gizzard in the sun, v'chevan derafi aklif iklif, and once it got warm, once it warmed up a little bit, they were able to peel it. So I will say, that would seem to indicate that even if it's not immediately peelable, halacha l'maaseh, again, it's still kosher. So therefore, I would say that even these eight birds, if the gizzard is peelable by knife, that should satisfy the criteria of peelable and it should be kosher. Hasam ki rafi iklif bi'adad. No, here's the difference. With whatever the reason, that bird had a tougher gizzard, right? But l'maaseh, once you warmed it up a little bit in the sun, it was peelable by hand. Hacha, with these other eight birds, Afagav de Rafi, even if the gizzard is made softer, lo maklif ela bisakina. Ultimately, again, it can't be peeled by hand, and can only be peeled by knife. So that's the shayla. That's the shayla. Given the fact that these birds can never have a peelable gizzard by hand, only by knife, does that make them kosher or treif? Incredible. Let's go back there. Amar Abaye, Abaye says Tarnagola da'agma chad mishmona seikasu. The tarnagol, which means literally again, like the rooster, right, or the hen, right, the rooster of the swamp, a swamp rooster is one of these eight sveikas. One of these eight, havahinu mardu. It's also, so apparently the swamp rooster is also known as the mardu. Okay, good to know. Amra papa, tarnagola da'agma asira, listen to this, the swamp rooster is asir, tarnagolta da'agma sharia. But the swamp rooster is asr, but the swamp hen is going to be mutter. Now again, both sides, it can't be that this is the same animal, different genders, right? Because why do you know that? Because there's no such thing in halacha of like you have a type of animal and the male is asr and the female is kasher. That doesn't make any sense. So it must be that even though one is called the swamp rooster and one is called the swamp hen, they're actually two different birds. So the swamp rooster is going to be asr, the swamp hen is going to be mutter. How do you remember this difference? Simanich amoni v'lo amonis. So how do you remember it? Here again, because the pasuk says lo yava amoni v'kal Hashem, an Ammonite is not permitted to go ahead and marry into the assembly of Klal Yisrael, but that only applies to the men, doesn't apply to the women. And therefore, again, that's the way to remember it. It only applies to the swamp rooster, doesn't apply to the swamp hen. Incredible. Darash Mereimar, Tarnagolta da'agma asura. Ultimately, and so Mereimar said, the swamp rooster is asur. Why? Chazyuha didar sava'achla. Because we've seen it, we see that when it eats, it grabs and eats. It grabs and eats. Vahinu girusa, and this is also the bird known as the girusa. Okay, so also the Gemara just gives other birds now. Amar Rav. Rav said shavur and shavur and departa. Right, sorry, and rafta. Right, the shavur and rafta bird is shari. Ultimately, again, is shari. Shari, right? So again, so these are the names of birds. So shavur and parta, that bird is mutter. Pirus and parta, asr. But the bird known as pirus and parta, that ultimately again is going to be asr. Okay, how do you remember which one is which? V'simanich pirus risha. The way to remember it is that pirus was a rasha. Who was pirus? If you look at Rashi, this is four lines up from the bottom in Rashi. Pirus risha, shem adam shayamuchzak rasha beinayim. So apparently there was a guy named pirus who everyone knew was a big rasha. Okay, so he had a reputation. So therefore, again, both said this is important. So the bird that's known as shavur anparta, that's a kosher bird. But pirus anparta is a treif bird. And the way to remember that is because the guy pirus was a big rasha. Okay, Gemara says, Amravuna, bunya shari. A bird known as bunya is mutter, paru asir. But the bird known as paru, that is going to be asir. Visimanech, how do you remember that? Perua amagusha. Because a guy by the name of Perua was a sorcerer. Sorcery is asr, and therefore halacha lamaisa, the bird that's known as the paru is treif, is not kosher. Now, I want to show something very interesting over here. If you look at the last Rashi on the daf, Perua amagusha, Rashi says shem mechashef hu vu asal lishkas beis haparu meseches yuma. Here, Rabbi Yisrael, listen to this. This guy Perua was a sorcerer. Obviously, sorcery bad. Right, so it's really bad. Isra Daraisa. Interestingly enough, this guy became a Baal Tshuva, and he helped to construct one of the chambers in the Beis HaMikdash, a chamber by the name of Beis HaParva. Right? So why is this interesting? It's interesting because obviously he became a Baal Tshuva. So if you become a Baal Tshuva, one of the halachas by Baal Tshuva is that what are you not supposed to do? You're not supposed to remind them of their past. Right? Somebody comes to Baal Tshuva, you must really miss eating treif. Right? Wow, it must be really difficult for you. Oh, wow, what is it like not to drive on Shabbos? It must be so inconvenient. You're not allowed to do that. You know, a person comes to Baal Tshuva, ultimately, again, you don't remind any Baal Tshuva of their past. And that's in general. A person committed a particular Aveira, but they stopped doing that. You don't remind the person of their past. That's the way the halacha works. So it's fascinating in the Gemara over here that this guy Perua, who was a sorcerer, yet became a Baal Tshuva, yet Rabosai, the way that we're remembering the name of a non-kosher bird is by using his name. right? That the paru bird is going to be usher. Oh, what's the way? Do you remember that? Because parua amagusha, there was parua the sorcerer, but he was about tshuva. It was about tshuva. So I'll say, could very well be that the Musa Haskell is that yes, you don't remind about tshuva of their past. That is absolutely unequivocally true. However, it is always important for us to understand that as much as you could do tshuva for anything and everything, sometimes in life you do create irreversible realities. In the world of schar and onesh, in the world of reward and punishment, can you reverse things? Absolutely. Absolutely you could reverse things. But at the end of the day, our actions sometimes create irreversible realities. I can be a Baal Tshuva, and I can set the record straight by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that does not necessarily mean that I can undo the things that I do in life. And I will say, this is one of the hardest things. I think we all live with this in certain ways, right? All of us have done things which cannot be undone. And then to be saddled with the pain of actions which cannot be reversed is one of the most overwhelming and difficult things to live with in this world. But it's reality nevertheless. So I don't know what this guy Perua did. Obviously, he was a Baal Tshuva, and he went ahead and built this beautiful chamber in the Beis HaMikdash. But at the end of the day, he must have created certain irreversible consequences. Hence, Chazal went ahead, and when they wanted to remember the name of a non-kosher bird, utilized his Merabosai, sensitizes us to how we live, how we make decisions, how we move forward in life. Because again, we always know that tshuva is possible, and we can always reset the slate with that Kaddish Baruch Hu. But we have to be careful because there are things that you do in this world that cannot be reversed. Be so careful before we act, before we do. Because we always think that there's a way to back out of things. But Lamai said there are certain realities in this world which have irreversible consequences. Therefore, choose wisely. The Gemara goes, Rav Papa says, Mardu Zigid Va'achol Shari. Okay, so we'll say, this is the name of a bird. Those three words. Mardu Zigid Va'ochel. This is the name of a bird, which literally means, right, it stands, a bird that stands straight and eats. That's right, that's ultimately a kosher bird. Sogid Va'ochel, but the bird that is known as the one that bends, that is going to be Aser. V'simanech, and the Pahari, I remember which one is which, V'simanech, lo tishtachave le'el acher. Don't bow down to another god. Don't worship idolatry. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? So therefore, the bird that stands erect, right, and eats, that's fine. The bird that bows down, that's going to be Aser. Incredible. Amr Shmuel. Shmuel says, Shas Yachama Asira. There's a bird that's known as the wine drinker. Right? The bird, the wine drinker, sounds delicious, right? The wine drinker bird is going to be Aser. How do you know this? V'simanech, Shesuye Yayim Pasol La'avoda. Ultimately, again, I will say, because a kohen who drinks wine, ultimately, again, can't do the avodah. Amar Shmuel says, Mazga Chamra Asira. Literally, again, these are the names of birds. So the birds that's known as the Mazga Chamra, it's Aser. Top of Samach Gimel. Bas Mazga Chamra Sharia. But the bird that's known as the daughter of the diluted wine drinker, ultimately, again, that's Mutter. How do you remember which one is which? Simanach, Yotha Koach Abemi Koach Av. The way to remember this is, sometimes the power of the son is greater than the power of the father. So in this case over here, right, the bird that's known as the daughter, ultimately, again, is going to be Mutter, but the one that's known ultimately, again, as the parent is going to be. So we have to stop over here for today. We'll pick up more. Again, I will say tomorrow, we'll get to the Shulchan Aruch Amir Tzashem, Halacha L'Maisa, greater level of clarity. Shkayach, everyone. Everyone's going to have a great day.
Amen.